This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 370-some. I'm Ginger.
Is that a number? 70-some?
I think I just made it a number, 70-some.
Oh, that's very strange. And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So this episode, we like to love. I mean, we can love, sure. That's not the direction I thought it was going. I meant to say, like to thank. We still would like to thank co-producer Laura D. And we love our co-producers. And there are still spots left for our Pod Abroad 2021 trip. We'd love to hear from you for any and all information on dates, itinerary, price, any information. Yes, you could always reach out to us, but all of the information, because we don't have itineraries memorized, you can find at podabroad.com.
It is true.
Do we have any announcement?
I mean, here's the thing, Ginger. I can absolutely do the announcements, but is it going to go in this week's episode or is it going to go in
Don't worry
two
about
weeks?
That. I'll take it out. Okay. I will scissor it. That does not sound good.
Scissoring. This is not what we do. That is not what we do here.
I will extract it.
We haven't done this in a while. Announcements.
Ha ha! But do we have them? Ooh!
I mean, they are announcements. Absolutely,
people,
they are
period.
Announcements. But the announcement of the castings of the Christies is indicative of the fact that we are going to get the Malva storyline.
Summer's favorite character after Geneva.
God. Yeah.
She doesn't like me to
so,
say that.
So they have cast all of the Christies. So we have Tom Christie will be played by Mark Lewis Jones, who was previously seen in Gangs of London. We have Jessica Reynolds, who will be playing Malva Christie. And Alexander Vlahos, and I am probably butchering that, will be
no,
playing
Alan
Christie.
No, that's pretty close to what he said, if I remember correctly.
I didn't watch the videos. I've just been reading the announcements. So this is how people talk when they learn how to new words from reading and not from hearing them said. So that means I'm a reader, people. So we will have the Christies. Yay. That's all I got. I can't get excited.
I'm excited that we have them, and I'm not. I mean, we're not going to go into, you know, spoilers right now because, you know, sticking with our own read-along, we can absolutely bitch and moan. Well, you have free reign to bitch and moan. It's your life. It's your air from your lungs. I am not judging
Thank
that.
Thank you
I'm
for
not
the permission.
Saying stop. I'm not saying you. I mean our listeners, but you too.
Okay.
Anyway, my point is, even if we wanted to, and I know Summer wants to, I would love to talk about it. And I think Summer would love to maybe probably just not talk about it at all. But if anything, she would bitch about it, which I totally get because it's not her favorite person. However, since we are not there yet in our discussion of the books, meaning the big, bad, ugly, whatever that may be, really goes through not the end of the book. The ramifications go through toward the three quarters through. But anyhoozle, we're not there yet as far as the Malvas, or I should say the Christie storyline. So we can't really talk about why we don't maybe adore this person yet.
But come on, y'all have read, you know. If you've read, you know.
If you've read it, you know.
It's not
exactly.
Secret.
No,
it's not like I got a separate cut of the book with edits that nobody else got. It's not a secret. If you've read the books, you know why I don't like her.
Well, that's very exactly. That's exactly it. So we can't talk about or won't talk about specifics, but we can say, because I don't think Summer will, I will say that I am very enthused by the casting because, yeah, it means they're actually, you know, keeping the storyline. Or we don't know how they're going to keep it, but they're keeping the characters. But I'm excited because what does it mean? It means drama. And I love the drama.
It was definitely questioned when, oh my God, I just totally blanked on her name. Hang on.
Malva?
No. I would never blank on that awful name.
You're funny.
No. Oh, God, what? Hang on.
Is it a character?
Brain. Yes.
Or a person? Or a real person?
No, it's the character. Hang on.
Lizzie? Claire?
No.
Is it a woman or a man?
It's a woman. Marsley. Oh, because when they brought Marsley in to be her right hand surgery man, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
When they brought her into the fold, yes. I was like, well, maybe they're not bothering with the Malva storyline.
Well, I think a lot of people were concerned. Yeah. But now that she's got 85 babies,
she's no longer the apprentice. Do we think that they just had them do that? Had her do that so that they didn't have to build a whiskey still for them to blow up?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they had one off camera, but obviously that is a lot cheaper
kept her in the surgery and in the big house so they could have all of those things happen in sets they already had. I don't know.
We don't know exactly.
Who can say? I can't. That's just thoughts.
The one thing, and I'm not a huge fan of it, but obviously I have let it go. But now that it's gone, since they sped up or pulled forward the storyline of like the abduction and the rape and then killing of Lionel and then returning his body, all that storyline sequence, whatever. And of course, Bonnet. We got no Bonnet. It's not just that. It is further reaching than that. We have no Lord John. But anyway, there are other potential ramifications. But my point is, even if I, you, he, she, they, we, it, whatever, weren't like huge fans of like what they did or maybe not cut out. No one's upset they made book five shorter. No one's upset. But, you know, when you take something that kind of big out of a book, they kept it, but they moved it. Whatever. It's done. The one good thing, agree or disagree with what they did or how they did it, the one good thing I think we all can agree on is that they made more space. We don't know how many episodes. I think is it 10?
12 episodes. In total, season 6 will have 12 episodes.
Okay, perfect. The books are long. They only get longer up until book 6. Book 6 to this day, until we get book 9, so we don't know. Book 6 to this day, even 7 and even given 8, is the longest. The longest. So if you're going to pull out of any book, I guess it makes sense to pull out of 6. So by doing that, they have kept the same number approximately of episodes, but allowed more space for the stuff that remains to be played out in. And also not only that, but 6, it would have been a terrible place to end. So I'm glad we're at least getting 7, which to me probably says we're going to get 8 unless they butcher, because there's so much. The thing is, as a book gets long, books get longer, they get more complicated. There's more characters, right? So that's a sticky wicket. Like, that's hard and challenging anyway. I do not admire. I do admire them. I do not
envy.
I do not envy them. Yes, I do not envy the people who have to break these down, okay? But what I'm trying to say is, if we got 7, which we did, and
that's new too.
That's new too.
Since we recorded.
Sorry, we got 7. Since we last reported.
If so we got 7 and casting announcements, it's been a week, y'all. Or a few weeks.
But since we get 7, that makes me think, even though they didn't greenlight it together, that makes me think we'll probably get 8. The reason is, again, hard to say because I'm not going to spoil, but if you've read, you'll know what I'm trying to get at. Leaving at 6, even forgetting that we have 7, ending at 6, if they kept the ending, which is an important ending because it really sets off for 7, right? Or the rest of the whole series. It would be a terrible place to leave our characters at. It would be sad, put it that way.
Let's be completely honest. If they ended season 6 the way book 6 ends, that is no ending.
That's what I'm saying. It's sad. It's crazy. But if they ended at season 7,
they left a...
Summer, we're not spoiling. That's not 6. That's 7.
No, that's 6. That's how 6 ends.
6, they're not in the yet. That's 7.
No,
Summer,
it's
that's
not.
7. Summer, at the end
7
of 6.
7 is Moby, is it not?
No, 8 is Moby. 7 is Echo. Sorry. Yeah, 7 is Echo.
I don't know books anymore.
It's okay. My point is that 6, we agree, is a terrible place to leave it, right? 7, however, as Summer has just hinted at, and I will take out, is another not so great place to leave it. Not that they will leave it, because they could combine stuff or change stuff. But the thing that I think a lot of people agree on is that 8 would be maybe unsatisfying, because we're going to have 9 and 10 and we want to see all the books. But it would be a happy place, I think, that you could end on. 8 has a beautiful ending, a beautiful ending. So the all I'm trying to say is because the books get longer and more complicated, they can take stuff off, but it's only going to become more challenging. So I think there's great hope that we have 7. I think there's great hope because of that, that we might have 8. I'm not sure about past that, but we're not stars. So let's get going.
I mean, let's be completely honest. Outlanders is a really big moneymaker for stars. And as long as they have the actors, the main two, willing to keep coming back, I think they'll keep going. I think that they could not recast either of those two people at this point. I think if either of these two people were like, I'm out, y'all. I don't want to do this anymore. Then it would be, okay, how do we wrap this up? Because I don't think they could do this show without the two main actors at all. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. They are in the middle of, they are producing the show right now. They're filming, they're doing all the things, and we're looking forward to 2022. So we have, you know, the rest of the year to finish this book.
This episode is sponsored by Brooklinen.
And now, on to our read-along. Oh my God, I haven't said that and it feels like forever. This week,
probably like 2 months.
I know. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, beginning with chapter 42, entitled Dress Rehearsal.
Bobby's bum is better. This brings up the point. Since
the alliteration
we didn't meet,
of that.
It's perfection. I know. You're welcome. So since we didn't meet Bobby in season 5, or maybe we won't until, maybe we don't until book 6 or ever. And since Lord John is back in London
with Ulysses
in the show, do we even get a Bobby Higgins? His sole purpose was besides providing another member for the women to fawn over, mm-mm, was to be the delivery man for Lord John.
Well, to be fair, Ulysses can never be his delivery man, ever.
You he can't never send, was.
I know. I'm saying they can't replace Bobby with Ulysses. So
also because he's gone.
Well, I know he's gone, but they could still have a delivery man. I mean, he could just be going to and from
London.
Not London, but I mean, he could be his agent in the United States where he picks stuff up from wherever and delivers it to where it needs to go. I don't know. I don't have to know because I am not writing the adaptation.
Yeah, I think it would just be not sick. It would just be sad to lose that character, but they pretty much done away with an easy way for him to be there. I mean, we'll see. It's not a big deal, blah blah blah. But one thing I was thinking about as well is that when I don't know if we said it in our last episode, but it was not an announcement, but it was on social that Ron Moore had done an interview with a podcast. And in it, he said he was asked about further seasons and about spinoffs. And his answer was vague but positive. He said, "We are in talks for both, and we think we'll have some good news for you on both fronts soon." So we got the season 7 announcement. And if there's good news about a spinoff, the only good news is that one is coming. Like, other than that, like, how do you make it good news, right?
Well, it's good news that one is coming. And the actor for the spinoff is 100% available, to my knowledge, because he's not too busy with Outlander now.
I don't think he's available because they cut the character early. I think they cut the character early to make him available.
I know. That's what I just said.
Well, kind of sideways, but yeah. Okay. We agree that it was connected. So again, no announcement here. A lot of guessing, but pretty strong guessing now that there's like, quote unquote, positive news about a spinoff. And yeah, I mean, it only makes sense that it would be Lord
spin-off.
John.
That's the, here's the thing. What the reason that Outlander, to be honest, in my opinion, is as successful as it is because it's based on a successful book series. So if they're going to do a spinoff of a show about a successful book series, and there are already spinoffs available as book series attached to and written by the same author, why would they try to come up with a different spinoff? I'm just saying. It's already there.
Yeah. It is there, and it's the only spinoff she's written, correct?
I mean, she's done novellas and little short stories with Joni and a couple
of other
people.
Okay, spinoff series. This is the only series she's written.
I'm just saying. It's easy. It's already there. It's written. Just, you know.
So we're happy. Well, we're happy. We don't have news yet. We're excited for that to maybe be the case. So it's sad. It's not sad to get a spinoff if we get it. It's sad to lose Lord John. But I know they have to. Anyway, what I was saying was, or what I thought as I was taking notes was, it's kind of, it's not shocking that they would, you know, maybe take the character away to make the dude, the actor, available for another job. Here's the thing. What they could have done, and I'm very curious on why no one thought about this. My guess is because they aren't book readers. I mean, Meryl is, but come on. What they could have done is done the same thing as in, you know, have him take Ulysses. And I mean, it could have been, or they could have found maybe another way to dispatch with Ulysses. I don't know. But anyway, with Lord John, they could have not gotten rid of him, quote unquote, but sent, you know, he went, have him go back to Virginia, to his plantation, like he does in the book. They could have had him be a silent or non-appearing character in season 6 or going forward.
He's only in letters anyway right now.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And we could have gotten Bobby.
We could have gotten Bobby as the delivery person and had Lord John through his letters. And they wouldn't have had to send the guy back to London. But sending someone back to London means like he's gone.
I think they sent him back to London specifically for the spinoff purposes because all of those books take place, I believe, in London. So
I see what you're saying.
In the UK, I should say. So that being said, they had to transport him off of the mainland.
That makes sense.
Available for the side stories that are part of the Lord John series. That being said, they could still have absolutely kept him to do letters. So he can still send letters. So all these letters, and he can still send presents and still send things to the Frasers in the wilds of colonial America. They can still absolutely do that. And I think he's going to have to come back if they actually want to keep book
8.
Intact and 7 intact. You know what I mean? If they want to keep those books intact, he has things to do. They may just have him come back with when he comes back. They may have them come back together.
So if we get book 8, 100% we need Lord John. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. Book 7, I've listened to several times, but it's not as stick in my mind as book 8. I know book 8, Lord John, there's a big old, there's some scandal that happens at the, oh no, God, for that, hello kitty, for that scandal to happen, heck yeah, he needs to be in Boston.
Exactly.
So I don't know what brings him back to Boston, but if we're getting 7, I don't see how you take out Lord John. But any hoozle, that's not our worry. So I'll get back to chapter 42. So all that to say, I was thinking, you know, we could have had Bobby be this delivery person, right? The letter bringer, whatever, and still and not seen Lord John. But yeah, you're right. If it's to be believable that his character is in London doing stuff, yet Outlander says he's in Virginia, that ain't gonna work. Oh man, I don't envy what they have to do. Okay, so. But it would be sad if we lost Bobby. I'll say that much. So Mrs. Bug was feeding him to help him put on weight. And Lizzie, too, was looking healthier. So why is Claire? So basically, Claire is like literally weighing people, not mm-hmm. literally like putting them on a scale, but with her eyeballs like going, oh, how much does that person weigh? How much does that person weigh? So why is Claire all weight happy? She's prepping.
She wants to play with her new toy.
For ether play.
Mm-hmm.
She finally made
it. That sounded like pig Latin.
Ether play?
And I'm like, what's pleather? I was like, I don't understand what pleather is.
Because it's not, but that's funny. She had finally made it and she hadn't had any success in getting anyone to be a guinea pig. And of course it was her papist plot. But Bobby and Lizzie she wasn't able to get any guinea pigs. Malva was like, But Bobby and Lizzie were susceptible enough to her. A poor Bobby is getting some hints about what she's up to. So not the content of what she's going to do, but he gets the hint that something's going on. And since Jamie and young Ian had gone to see the Cherokee and wouldn't be back for a week or so, she had plenty of time to try her ether games, to play her ether games. She asks Bobby, who is unsure, but who becomes slightly more interested when he learns that one Malva Christie will be assisting her. Uh-huh. Lizzie was not happy about that. She plans on doing it the next morning, Claire does. On ether, Mia writes, where and when? USA and Europe, 1842, early 20th century. What is it? The compound known as ether, or diethyl ether, was discovered centuries before its effectiveness as an anesthetic was realized. Its main medicinal uses were for treating lung infections and scurvy, but it was also used as a recreational drug. In fact, it was its recreational use that led to its discovery as an analgesic. It's at a vapor party, or ether frolic, people would soak towels in the liquid and place them over their faces. At one of these, Dr. Crawford Long noticed that his friends didn't seem to be in pain after injuries such as a heavy fall. Seizing on the possibilities, he demonstrated that the possibility of using it for surgery. Now, does it work? Although relatively safe, it can cause nausea and vomiting upon waking up, which is one of the reasons it fell out of favor. Another reason is its flammability. It was eventually replaced by the non-flammable chloroform, which also takes effect more rapidly. The main focus of this chapter is on Claire's experiments in using ether on practice patients. The traditions and superstitions of the people are again mentioned in the context of how they did view an offer to remove pain from them as being in some way contrary to the divine vision of the universe, unquote. Mava Christie also mentions that she dare not tell her father about these experiments as he calls it devil's work, and no one but God has a right to do such things. The inherent and extreme flammability of ether is, in itself, a sinister foreshadowing for a major future plot resolution. Yep. And Mia shares the link for where she got all this information about ether. And we'll share that link in the show notes. So Brianna had made her an ether mask. And the next morning, when it's Lizzie goes first, Claire instructs Malva what to do. And as she's lying down, Bobby holds Lizzie's hand. Malva drops the drops, and Lizzie goes out. And while she's out, Claire pricks Lizzie's finger to get blood because she needed it anyway. She's checking her routinely for her malarial thingamabobs. And then Lizzie is allowed to come out of it. And Lizzie does not believe that she's been under. She's like, nope, I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I just woke up. I was out and I woke up.
She doesn't think she went out at all. She's like, I closed my eyes and I opened them again. And you guys were all still here. So I don't know what you're talking about.
So they're like, fine. So Bobby goes to do it. Lizzie freaks out when he goes under. Malva plays with consciousness and Claire makes note of timing and the amount of ether. So this is the whole reason she wants these guinea pigs, is so that when it comes to an actual emergency, she will have a rough idea about someone's size and how much ether to give them and how much is required to put them out and keep them under. And then they bring Bobby out of it.
Does anyone else feel like ether? Malva's way too excited about her power?
It's a common theme. And if you haven't gotten it now, get it now.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Malva says, I've never seen the like. Okay, I'm not doing the accent. It's such a feeling, is it not? Like as we killed him and brought him alive again.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
She's gone exactly. Mad with power.
She's sick with power. She understands, Malva does. She understands why her father thinks this whole thing is the devil's work. Claire says, yeah, maybe not.
I tell you what, though, I know that rubs me so wrong. Claire having those conversations with Malva.
Yeah.
And encouraging secretive things. Yeah. And as a parent, I wouldn't like some other adult telling my kid not to tell me things.
Yeah.
That's creepy. So I don't like it a lot. I still don't like Malva. I'm never going to like her. But I don't appreciate Claire very much in this interaction.
Yeah, I understand that. Then Bobby wakes up and barfs. Now, his experience was a little different than Lizzie's. Lizzie like went out and basically she says, I fell asleep or I went out. I had a little bit difficult time breathing. And then I opened my eyes and I knew you guys were all standing above me, or I saw your faces above me. She does not remember anything. Now, she may not have been out as long as Bobby. We don't get the exact length of time. But I believe he was out longer, and his experience was definitely different. He had had some terrible dreams, which of course were hallucinations. And Lizzie disagrees. They have a discussion that it's some don't think, or most of them don't think, that it was actually a form of sleep. Claire's like, it actually is. And Lizzie's like, no, because when you sleep, this happens to you. And when this happened, when you did this thing, your soul's gone to limbo, or whatever papist thing they talked about, right? And then as they all feel a bit lightheaded, Claire does something and Diana does some educating that we'd all best learn and remember.
I mean, quote, when are you going to come into contact with ether? Well, why is this a lesson we need to know?
Well, no. Not for us in these days. For us, for the books.
Okay.
Quote, I'd opened both surgery windows to provide ventilation and save us all being gassed. But ether was insidious, heavier than air. It tended to sink toward the floor of a room and accumulate there, unless there was a fan or some other device to remove it. Unquote. Just tuck that in the back of your head. So now she's got another potential rumor mill started that ether separated people from their souls. Come on now. So she lets them all go. So we are reminded at the end of this chapter that Lizzie is to be wed in August. And Claire asks Bobby if he recognized the figure he saw while he was under. And he says, no.
Who do you think he saw?
It had to have been someone he recognized, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't say he recognized them.
He said it was a woman and that he pretended he didn't. The way that he said he didn't recognize them implied that he absolutely recognized them.
So maybe it was Claire.
I don't know. That would be. Or maybe not. It could have been somebody from his past that we just don't know about.
That's true.
It's been a while since I read this book, y'all. It's all new to me. Except for the broad strokes. The broad strokes I remember. It's the minutia of the chapters that I'm like, I don't recall that happening, but good times. And that was chapter 42. Moving right along to chapter 43, entitled Displaced Persons.
Jamie and young Ian, as we said in the last discussion of the last chapter, were going to visit the Cherokee. And in this chapter, they are en route. And they stop to water the horses, so why not water our bods?
Does he ever not get into a fight when he's naked?
Who, Jamie?
Yes. I'm like, every time he takes his clothes off at a river, it feels like somebody shows up, either a bear or randos trying to steal his horse, or pick an adjective, pick a proper noun. That's going to show up and he's going to be naked and have to do something about it without clothes on.
Well, he bathing, and so is Ian with Rollo, but they're up the creek or up the river or whatever it is. So Jamie is ruminating over a note that MacDonald had delivered to him from John Stewart, the Indian superintendent of the Southern Department. It had urged more vigorous involvement with the native population to kind of get them more vigorously involved with
more
the crown, fighting for the crown.
He wants them to seed the people into the positions that he thinks will do the most good for the crown and not the most good for the people.
Yes,
the
and
tribes.
Jamie is a bit cynical about this. And meanwhile, as he's cynicaling about watching his silver bubbles, there are two Tuscarora men there watching Jamie and Ian. Or Ian and another man that was actually Rollo. So they actually aren't watching Jamie, thankfully. They're watching Ian and Rollo, thinking it's two people. And so, as Summer said, a naked Jamie surprise attacks the dudes. And
he doesn't
one
just surprise
runs
attack. He like army crawls through the mud.
He does.
Like he's covered. Like it's that is not a thing I would do naked. Like if I had a penis, I can't imagine wanting to drag my dick through the mud to go fight a dude, because that's literally what he did.
And he grabs like a branch or something and then goes full Tulahar to them. So he goes to town. And the one runs away, the other not so much. He's injured, so he doesn't get very far. Rough and tumble, Ian and Rollo join the fight. So in the end, they've taken two Tuscarora as captives. One, they have long names. One is nicknamed Goose and the other Light on Water. So the Cherokee, we learn, had taken Light's wife and they had come to get her back. So they sit and eat and talk about how to go about. That's a lot of abouts. They talk about how to go about getting Light's wife back. Maybe ask Bird to adopt the two men. He had some bags of bribery, as he called it, or full of things to bribe with, and he'd have to use some of that. he would ransom Mrs. Light or pay her ransom. And if he needed it, he could always send Ian back to the Ridge to get more of this bribery stuff, since they had more, if he had to use all of it to get Mrs. Light, because again, they're there to do business with the Cherokee. And if he uses all of his bribery, everything in his bribery sack for Mrs. Light, he'll have nothing left for his own business. So he's thinking about that too.
I just feel so bad for these people. Because they're displaced, right? So their tribe, all of the rest of their tribe is gone. They've been murdered by these other people. And his
or
wife
they
was,
migrated north, yes.
Right. I'm saying what was left of their tribe was murdered by this other tribe. And they took the woman, but they left these two men, or these two men got away. So they're alone, and their best idea of, well, maybe we could be your slaves. And I'm just like, poor Jamie. He's like, I do not. I just got out of Cross Creek. I just got away from River Run and that. And I do not want, I don't want to be responsible for more people.
And also, you haven't met my daughter and my wife. It ain't going to happen.
No.
Even if I would say yes to protect you, it ain't going to happen. Or I'd be like kicked out of Dodge or the Ridge.
For sure. Some mornings you wake up feeling ready to pull the covers over your head and go back to sleep. No judgment, of course, but let's make having the most comfortable sheets the reason why. Don't love your sheets? Brooklinen has you covered.
Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company.
They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury level markups. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and tastes.
Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They are so confident you will love their products, they are even offering a 365-day money-back guarantee. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters and pillows, towels, and even loungewear and more.
And even though I am far outside of the 365-day money-back guarantee, I wouldn't give these sheets back if they wanted me to. They are still as buttery and soft and squishy and lovely and luxurious feeling as they were when we got them, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And I... Mine too. Can I just say ditto? So mine are also still buttery. Literally, even though they're sheets, they're not a mattress. You still want to sink in them or like pull them up and like rub on them because they're just that soft and smooth. And I chose, as someone I have kind of, you know, said multiple times before, because we love talking about our Brooklinen sheets, I have the white ones. I wanted them to go with anything I already had, and different duvet covers or different sheets or pillows or whatever, different things that I had, the white fit in. So I can mix and match, or I can go all white or whatever. So it just really works in my room color scheme.
Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code Outlander to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping.
That's brooklinen.com and enter promo code Outlander to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping.
brooklinen.com and use promo code Outlander at checkout.
Mia N. writes, Jamie's compassionate empathy is on display here, as is his reflexive warrior nature. As a Highlander, he has great respect for the culture of the American Indians. He earns their respect, conversely, by immediately proving himself to be a clever and strong fighter, while completely naked. The name Light, the Tuscaroran man named Light, tells Jamie, through Ian's translation, that his wife has been taken by a party of Cherokee warriors and that, quote, they will kill us, of course, but that doesn't signify, unquote. Jamie replies, of course not, smiling despite himself. And when Ian says, they will kill you, Light replies, we don't mind. And Jamie, of course not. We know that Jamie has and will always surrender himself in defense of Claire. He deeply understands the men's similar feeling. Megan P. writes, love chapters from Jamie's point of view. I also love chapters that he's naked in bodies of water. For once, though, it's Jamie finding himself wrapped up in someone else's problems instead of Claire. I always enjoy when Jamie and young Ian get the chance to team up. The exchange with the two young natives is really good and makes you want Jamie and Ian to come to their aid. Luckily, it seems they will indeed be assisting them, and I'm looking forward to finding out how they get the native's wife back. I also don't for one second believe that Jamie won't be adopting the young men. I foresee them being close allies moving forward.
And completing this week's read along with chapter 44 entitled Scotchy.
So they're able to arrange, they get to the village, they meet with Bird and the people in charge, and they're able to arrange the ransom for Mrs. Light. And Mrs. Light came fairly cheaply. Mm-mm. Now he notes when he sees her that she oozed the similar appeal as certain women he'd seen, and he recognizes it as the same thing he'd seen in Claire. Now remember, this is also something that the enslaved woman whom they helped escape River Run during Dumbs of Autumn, remember that some? Mm-hmm. That woman was also commented, if not by Jamie, then by Diana, to have had that same kind of je ne sais quoi about her, mm-hmm. because she literally like went from looking normal, average, whatever, to like
a siren.
Yes. When she literally like just like turned the way her hips were or turned her chest or whatever it was, turned her her positioning. Mm-hmm.
He proposes that potentially it's just because there might be French blood. Like maybe it's just a French thing.
Fair enough. And he also notes that there's a guest among the Cherokee, a man named Alexander Cameron, whom the Cherokee call Scotchy. Now, Scotchy had lived with the Cherokee since he was 15, and he even had a Cherokee wife, and he was very highly thought of by them. He was also an Indian agent, and he was with John Stewart. Remember, in the last chapter, we learned or are reminded that John Stewart was the Indian superintendent of the Southern Department. So he's a head honcho dude, a big wig dude. So Scotchy recognizes, other people are addressing him as well, so it's not out of the blue, but he probably had a lot of, you know, context clues, meaning his height and his red hair. He recognizes Jamie as he must be the redheaded bear killer. Their hosts bring them, I don't call it a meal. The meal, the true feast is later on, but what they do bring them, the liver that was roasted from the kill that they did. And then they retire, the men do, to drink and talk shop. Cameron tells Jamie why he's there. Now this dude named Henderson, prior Chief Justice of Superior Court in North Carolina, had been run out by the regulation. Now, this man, Henderson, had purchased land inside the treaty line and was setting up townships. So he was actually going against British law. However, the Brits overlooked it because the dude had no problem disregarding the treaty. And officially, like I said, this wasn't okay. This was technically illegal. But unofficially, it helped further the department's goal of bringing the Indians, the Cherokee, all of the natives there under the sway of British influence. So if they could slowly, or not so slowly, encroach upon the territory, and they weren't like, I mean, I don't know if, I'm not saying no one ever died because of it, but if they could do it by paying the Indians, however that happened, right? Because what this chapter described, that Henderson bought the land from the Cherokee. So it wasn't a steal. I mean, that's a whole other discussion, which I know is really rich for me to say. But we're led to understand that there was a transaction, and so the native population, or someone at least, whoever did the deed, approved of this sale because they took, whether it was money or goods or gifts or whatever it was, they took something for the quote unquote sale. And so while it absolutely went against the treaty agreement and it was in treaty lines on Indian land, the British didn't do anything about it because if, number one, it wasn't actively killing people, right? It wasn't like stirring, it was not a big stir because the Indians or the native population took the money or took whatever they took in return for that land, good or bad, if that's what we're led to believe. So no one was quote unquote injured or displaced by this, and which means they didn't have to like go, you know, soothe an uprising, put down an uprising, nothing like that. So that didn't hurt them, or that didn't, you know, cause them to have to go out there and show their force. And also, if they could get further into Indian land, further into the territory of the treaty, and could possibly benefit from it, they weren't gonna say no to this. I ain't gonna say no to this if they didn't have to, right? And so Cameron, why is he there though? Cameron was there to help the sale be met. So the sale of that land, I'm guessing, be met by approval or at least indifference by the Cherokee. And Cameron took it for granted that Jamie would help him. Not because he was, well, probably for a lot of reasons, that he was Scottish or British and that he also had land. Although outside the treaty, he also had land. He was also a landowner. And that he was an Indian agent, because that meant to outsiders or to someone, if you say, oh, so-and-so is an Indian agent, then by definition, you are there for the crown and the crown's interests are yours, or else you wouldn't have a job. So understandably, Cameron believes that as soon as he sees Jamie and knows what he is and who he is, like, he assumed Jamie would help him, and that's understandable. And so he wants to know, could he use it? To his, Jamie was thinking, okay, well, you know, whatever, but could I use this kind of thing to my / our own gain? Could I somehow help the native population, help the Cherokee specifically, and still help out Cameron? Could this be like a quid pro quo? And so he gets Cameron to promise him that this is that quid pro quo. Sorry, it wasn't for the Cherokee. It was for the three who the Tuscarora whom were captured or beaten. He gets Cameron to promise that Mr. and Mrs. Light and Goose won't be enslaved. So that's his quid pro quo right there. He's like, sure. So around the fire later that night, Jamie tells a story of Culloden, and he's thoroughly surprised by what he tells and sees.
What was in that tobacco?
Oh, goodness, right? They all must have seen it or something. It was totally. And after the festivities end, but before they go to bed, Jamie tells Bird and Cameron about the future. Quote, "The women of my family are those who see in dreams what is to come," unquote. He tells them of things that are to come and that will affect the Tsalagi. I believe that Tsalagi is a Cherokee. Okay, 60 years from then, from that point that they're talking, the Cherokee will be taken from their lands to a new place. Many will die. And he doesn't say Trail of Tears to them, but he explains what is or what will be the Trail of Tears.
He tries, but he doesn't know how to translate it, so he had to come up with different words.
He says the trail or the way people will cry. Yeah. And he says it will be white men who do it. It's not King George's men. It's hard to say who it's going to be when those people don't exist yet. It's the people he's talking to that he does business with. It's people like Jamie, right? Not our Jamie, but it's people like him.
Well, it's the American colonists. Colonialists? That's not a
word.
It's
the Americans, yeah.
Colonists?
It's the Americans.
Colonists.
Well, they're no longer colonists.
Right.
They're Americans. But it's future colonists. It's past. Yes. People who the colonists give birth to later on down the line. Yes. Yeah. But it's white people. It's the American government is who it is. And so he says it'll be white men, not King George's men. And he tries to communicate that if people, at least this is how I understood it. He was saying there was this big thing and then a small thing. So depending on what people did, they may not come across the big thing. But if they didn't do that small thing, they might come across the big thing. It was kind of convoluted. But from what I got from it was he was trying to communicate this thing's going to happen. But if you basically go away and, you know, choose to be somewhere else or choose to have your people be elsewhere, you might not get swept up in it and thus you will be safe. So he was trying to connect, if you make small decisions, things that you have say over in the next, you know, 40, 50 years, whatever.
You can't stop the big things, but you can change.
You can't stop the big thing from happening, period. It's going to happen. However, you might be able to stop the big thing from happening to you
from
and
affecting you personally. And exactly. To be fair, is Diana setting up that the whole reason that there is an Eastern Band of Cherokee now because Jamie told them to hide?
Girlfriend, I did not know that about the history. So maybe so. That's funny.
Yeah, that's how there's an Eastern Band. They were, they gathered up all of them that they could find and marched them to Oklahoma. But the people who stayed and hid in the mountains are still there. That's the Eastern Band of Cherokee.
Oh, my goodness. That's very sad. I doubt she's giving Jamie all the credit. No. But she's introducing something that maybe gives, maybe this little thing that Jamie can give them will enter their own folklore or enter their own living history or, you know, future dreamscape kind of thing, so that they can at least be aware of it for their future descendants. The wife, so he asks him, I think it's Bird asks Jamie, this wife you have, did you pay a great deal for her? And Jamie says,
God, did he?
She cost me almost everything I had, but
and he's still paying for it.
Yes. Now who's waiting in his bed this time? Not some cutesy young Cherokee chicks, but an elderly woman, not really in his bed, but in the room, in the place where he'll be sleeping. And she has him lie down and she combs his hair and she tells him to talk. It doesn't matter the language. So he speaks in Gaelic. He speaks of Scotland, of Culloden, of Greece. grief, loss, and fear. And he sees Jack Randall and he wonders, again, had he killed him or not?
And if I didn't, is what I'm feeling right now, regret that I didn't get to kill him, like it was vengeance unserved. Mm.
And so he says aloud, I hold no evil in my heart. This evil does not touch me. More may come, but not this. Not here, not now. And the old woman whispers, I understand, and goes on combing his hair.
I wouldn't mind that.
Oh my gosh. Out of all the things, like all the massages, all the things, I think head is the best.
Clearly, he's not interested in boffing the attractive young ladies, but he would like to get a head massage from an old lady, so bring it. I would be down with that.
Yes. Hello, Kitty.
And that was chapter 44. Join us next time when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapters 45, A Taint in the Blood, 46, In Which Things Gang Eggly, 47, Bees and Switches, and 48, Wood Ears. And as always, if you'd like to join us in the interim to continue the conversation, go to our Facebook group and you can get there directly from www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a very special thanks to our co-producer for this episode, Laura D. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're interested in purchasing any items with our artwork or with Outlander Podcast written on it, you can go to our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20, Outlander20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.
I dreamt it last night that my young